Until now, we've been speaking about the inyanim of the Mashiach, which is not an inyan that's really understood by most people. It's shrouded, of course, in a great deal of mystery. There are many chazals, but many of the chazals are sort of mystifying. And what I'm trying to do is giving some kind of clarity to what is the entire idea of the Mashiach about, his time period and so on. Until now, I've given different shurim in terms of two major topics. The first topic was the concept of the Mashiach and the historical antecedents that precedes the Mashiach, and I've given several shurim on that. The second series of shurim on the Mashiach was the entire method or derech of the Mashiach. How will he do his work? From now, I now begin to talk about the Mashiach in terms of his personality. When we talk about Mashiach, what do we really mean? Who is the Mashiach? Certainly on a spiritual level, and in a physical level, in terms of a real person, and that's what the Mashiach is, a real person, who and what does he look like? What kind of character does he have? And so on. At least what we can see from some of the Chazals. And then I hope to finish with the scenario of the Messianic times, the Mashiachus, the entire times of the Mashiach, what exactly will transpire, and what will be after the Yemos HaMashiach, in terms of what happens after Olam Haba and so on. Now, in talking about the personality of the Mashiach, the question is, what is meant by Mashiach? Who are we really talking about? What is it really meant? Now, in order to understand that, I had mentioned previously, and I'll just repeat it, that the neshama, the soul of a person, consists of five parts. And the word neshama is both a particular term, it's a term referring to one specific part, and it's also a collective term referring to all five parts. So the neshama, which is the collective term, refers to five parts. The nefesh, the ruach, the nefesh, meaning the spirit, soul, ruach, the spirit, the neshama also refers to a soul, the chaya, and yechida. Those are five parts. The nefesh, the ruach, the neshama, and there you have neshama as the particular part, the term referring to the particular part called chelek, called the neshama, and the other two are chaya and yechida. So therefore, every neshama consists of five different chalokim, or five different parts. Now, the fifth part, called the Yechida, sits basically outside the body, on top of the head. It's also referred to as the Keser, the crown, because it sits on top of the head, outside the body. And the Yechida is called the Keser, or the crown. Now, the Yechida itself is that aspect of the soul which of which it is its shirish, or source, its root. In other words, the root of the soul, the entire neshama itself, the entire idea called neshama, is the yechida, the shirish. Now, that is the connection or the link between the neshama and the Rabbanu Shlalom, that yechida. The yechida is the link or the kesher, the connection between the soul of an individual and the Rabbanu Shlalom himself. As such, through a person's yechida, he comes in contact with the Rabbanu Shlalom. In other words, the source of all existence we know is God, is the Rabbanu Shlalom. And he created, of course, neshamas, souls, and the closest manifestation that God has or is in that soul is the yechida. The yechida could be masig, the Rabbanu Shlalom, the closest, because it is the closest thing to the Rabbanu Shlalom in terms of man's soul, man's neshama. So therefore, the yechida is that aspect of the soul which is the greatest aspect. It is the link between the neshama of a man and the Rabbanu Shlalom, and as such, it could be masig, or come in contact, or experience the Rabbanu Shlalom. This is the yechida. Why is it called yechida? Because it is a link to the Yochid. Who is the Yochid? The one, the absolute unity, the Rabbanu Shlalom. The Yechido is the link to the Yochid. It's the link of man's soul to the Yochid, Be'olam, which is the Ribbono Shel'olam. It's also called Yechido because through the Yechido, an individual is masik the Yichud of the Ribbono Shel'olam. He comprehends the absolute unity of God. In other words, the Yechido is that aspect of the soul that feels the Ribbono Shel'olam because it's the closest part to the Ribbono Shel'olam. So from the Yechido, a person comes in contact with the Ribbono Shel'olam as his source, as his a foundation of his very being. So through the Yechido, a person is masig the Ribbono Shel'olam in terms of his unity, which is really the only way we can comprehend the Ribbono Shel'olam. Now, Adam Rishon, of course, who was the first man, had the same ideas. He had a neshama, all the different chalokim, and he also had yechida. Now, had Adam Rishon done the mitzvah he was commanded, what would have happened? Then he would have retained the yechida, that aspect of the neshama, and as a result of that, he would have been masig the Ribbono Shel'olam. He would have comprehended God as his source, the source of Adam's existence. And that would have ushered in Ulam Habo. That's what Adam would have received had he done the mitzvah. That the instrument by which he comprehends the Ribbono Shel'olam is his own Yechida. The chelik, or the part of his neshama called the Yechida. It would have remained on Adam, and it would have given him that incredible knowledge, that incredible comprehension of the Ribbono Shel'olam. That would have been his reward. However, Adam Rishon did not do the mitzvah, instead he did the chet. So as a result of that the Yechida, that part of Adam Rishon's neshama, the Yechida flew away. It is the only neshama in all creation, the Yechida of Adam Rishon, that was not tainted at all by his sin. It is pure. It's not tainted whatsoever by the chet of Adam Rishon, which means that, when I mean tainted, as a result of the sin of Adam, evil, as personified by the Yetzirah and so on, was able to have control over his body and over the world. And therefore you had death, deterioration of all living organisms and so on, which ensued. The Yechida has no connection whatsoever with the Yetzirah or the Sitra Achra, which is the term that represents the entire forces of evil. The Sitra Achra has no control whatsoever over that Yechida. It's completely untainted because it removed itself at the time of the Chet of Adam Rishon. Now as such, the Yechida split. It split. One part of the Yechida goes to the Mashiach ben Yosef, and I explain what the concept of Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David. One part of that Yechida goes to the Mashiach ben Yosef, and the second part of that Yechida goes to the Mashiach ben David. In other words, the two Mashiachim, both Mashiachs, get the Yechida of Adam Rishon. Now, that Yechida, which the two Mashiachs get, is what crowns them, or what makes them into the Mashiach, the Messiahs. Without yet Yechida of Adam Rishon, they are not a Mashiach. They are potentially a Mashiach, but they are not a Mashiach. It is the Yechid of Adam Rishon that comes down to this world and descends on a person, and in this case, of course, two people. That Yechid makes the two individuals, the Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David, it makes them the Mashiach. And the idea to that is because they have the Yechid, they then can do what the Mashiach has to do, and that is to reveal the absolute unity to the Bria, to all creation. If you recall, in terms of what I talked about what the method of the Mashiach is, that Yechida is the instrument whereby they reveal the unity of God. Because like I said, Yechida is the kesher, the connection between the soul of Adam Rishon, or all mankind, and the Ribbono Shel'olam, right? So therefore, it is that Yechida that goes down and splits and goes upon two different people that makes them the Mashiach, and therefore they have the instrument whereby they themselves comprehend the unity of the Ribbono Shel'olam, and they give it over to all Klal Yisrael. So therefore, obviously, the Mashiachs are made anointed by that yechida, and they can do their job, their task, as a result of that yechida. It gives them the capacity of being masig yichud of the Rabbanu Shalom, comprehending the absolute unity of God, and bringing that to all creation, bringing that to Klal Yisrael. So therefore, this is what they receive. Now, who are the ones who receive this yechida? Well, we know it's Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David. But what do we mean by Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David? In every generation, there is a certain aspect or certain group of neshamas which is called a shirish of Mashiach ben Yosef. In other words, these group of souls have the capacity to be a Mashiach if they get that yechida. If they don't, they're regular people. They're great people. They have the capacity to be Mashiach, but they're not, unless they get that yechida. The Rebbe Shem takes every generation and puts the root of the Mashiach ben Yosef in each generation, and he takes a root, or those group of neshamas, which are a shirish of Mashiach ben David. In other words, there are two groups of neshamas, of souls. One is the group of souls which can be a Mashiach ben Yosef, and then there are a group of souls which can be a Mashiach ben David. They are called what's called the roots. They can be either Mashiachim. So God takes, of all the souls in the group of Mashiach ben Yosef, he takes one and puts him down in each generation. So every generation has a neshama, a shirish, a root of the Mashiach ben Yosef that comes from that collection of souls. And in every generation, it's possible that the Mashiach ben Yosef will be anointed if the Yechida comes down. In the other side, Mashiach ben David, it's the same thing. Every generation has a shirish of the Mashiach ben David, meaning is that there's one soul, one individual in that generation, and only one, that can be Mashiach if Rabbanu Shalom sends down the Yechida. If he doesn't, then these individuals remain individuals with obviously incredible souls, but they are not Mashiachim. They do not become the Mashiach because they do not have the Yechida, which is that which is necessary for the Mashiach himself to experience the Rabbanu Shalom and therefore give it over to Klal Yisrael. That's very important to understand. The idea of the Shirish of a Mashiach ben Yosef is a group of souls that are called the Shirish, and the idea of the Shirish of Mashiach ben David, a group of souls that are called, that they can be the Mashiach ben David. And that in every generation, there is always either a Mashiach ben Yosef or a Mashiach ben David that can be it, if God, the Rabbanu Shalom, wants to send down the Yechida, that aspect of Adam Rishon which was taken away and is that which is the crown of the Mashiach, the Mashiachim, whether it be Yosef or David. Now, just like all the souls of humanity were included in the soul of Adam Rishon, in other words, Adam Rishon's neshama contained all souls of everybody who ever lived. His yechida also contains all the yechidas of all souls, right? So if the yechida of Adam Rishon flew away, obviously everybody's yechida flew away. In other words, the yechida of Adam Rishon includes the yechida of all souls of everybody. So nobody has the yechida. It's all wrapped up in that general yechida that flew away. So it comes out that that yechida which flew away in a general way contains all the yechidas of every soul that ever lived. All the souls of Jews. Every Jew's soul, the aspect of his yechida which is the closest connection to the Rebbeinu Shalom, is in that yechida of Adam Rishon. Now that yechida of Adam Rishon we know split, and the two Mashiachim get that. So in that sense, every individual in Klal Yisrael comprehends God because of their yechida, which is attached to the Mashiach, either Ben Yosef or Ben David. So it comes out that the Mashiachim is the conduit, the vessel by which the comprehension of the Rebbeinu Shalom goes to the yechida of the Mashiachim and right out to all Klal Yisrael. Because all Israel has their souls wrapped up in the neshama or the yechida of the Mashiachim, Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. That's the connection. So therefore, when the Rabbeinu Shalom sends down the Yechidah at some time that no one knows, at that time, all Yechidahs of all souls will also be down. And when they get their Yechidah, obviously, since it is nothing more than a composite of all the Yechidahs of all Neshamas of Klal Yisrael, when they finally become revealed, then everybody comprehends the unity of the Rabbeinu Shalom through their own Yechidah, which is part of the Yechidah of the Mashiachim, which was originally the Yechidah of Adam Rishon. See the way it works? That's where it goes back. But it is only that Yechidah of each soul, which is wrapped up in the Yechidah of Adam Rishon and the Mashiachim, the two Messiahs have it, that is the way a person connects to the Rabbeinu Shalom, because that's the closest part of his neshama to God himself. In that way, he feels the Rabbeinu Shalom in his very being. And that's how he achieves what's called Dvekus. That is really what Olam Haba is really all about.
In any case,
what I'm saying is that the Yechid of Adam Rishon, which is the generalized Yechid of all Klal Yisrael, gets split, and that goes to the two Mashiachs, and the two Mashiachs is the conduit or the vehicle whereby all Klal Yisrael comes in contact or experiences the Rabbeinu Shalom. So therefore, the general idea is that there's a concept called a shirish, a root of the Mashiach ben Yosef and ben David, those collections of neshamas that can receive this Yechidah, and each generation has one, including this generation, that there is somebody in this generation that could be a Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David. Why? Because since it's always possible for the Mashiach to come, right? Like the Gemara says, Mashiach said, whenever you do tshuva, I will come. He's always ready. So therefore, every generation has an individual, Mashiach ben Yosef, Mashiach ben David, or the sherish of either one, that can receive the Yechidah if the generation is worthy. And there's only one in each generation. There's no overlapping, although they can be contemporaries, one older and the other one younger. For instance, the Vilna Goyen in the Kol HaTur, which is a sefer written by a Talmud of the Vilna Goyen, give certain examples of who was the sherish of the Mashiach ben Yosef. For instance, Moshe Rabbeinu was, as I mentioned previously, was the Mashiach ben Yosef, and he almost became Mashiach. In fact, he was Mashiach, but it didn't last because of the sin of the eagle. Because he was the first Mashiach. He really took the Jews out of Mitzrayim, he redeemed the Jews, and he gave them the Torah. Yehoshua ben Nun also was the sherish of Mashiach ben Yosef from Ephraim. He was from Shevet Ephraim. Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, one of the Tanoim, was also a sherish of the Mashiach ben Yosef. You had the Ari, the one who was one of the principal people who revealed a great many of the secrets of Kabbalah. Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lutzate was also. The Vilna Goyen was also. He writes on himself that he's a sherish of Mashiach ben Yosef. But in any case, these people were shroshim, roots, or possible candidates to become the Mashiach ben Yosef if the Yechidah, which is that crown, had descended to earth. They would have been the Mashiach. So we now understand that the Mashiach means that individual who has a shirish, or comes from that collection of neshamas, that could be a candidate for Mashiach ben Yosef or Mashiach ben David, and that what makes him the Mashiach is that Yechidah, that crown, because that crown enables him to understand the unity of the Rabbeinu Shalom, to be mekabel the Or Rishon, which I had mentioned previously, that light which was hidden, that Chochmah, that's what enables him to receive that Chochmah, and once he receives it, of course, he can then give it to all of Klal Yisrael. The next thing we have to understand is another very important aspect of the Mashiach. And there is a beautiful medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni in Yeshaya. It's in 499, that section, if you want to look it up in Yeshaya. It talks a lot there about the Mashiach and so on. But in any case, it's in Yalkut Shimoni in the Sefer Yeshaya in section 499. Now, over there it talks, and it says a very beautiful story. it's not a story, but it's what's transpired. And it shows you another aspect of the Mashiach, very important aspect of the Mashiach. And that aspect begins to reveal some of his personality. Because until now, we know spiritually what the Mashiach is, but we don't know what he looks like as a human, which he certainly is. Now, there it says that the Rabbanu Shalom said to the Mashiach, which means the Yechidah, that's the Nishmas Mashiach. He was addressing himself to that. And he said that the ones who you will redeem at some point will have so many averis that somebody has to accept those averis or else they will be destroyed. In other words, Klai Yisrael, at one time, the averis of Klai Yisrael will be so great that it will merit their destruction. Chas v'shalom. But this is historically what happened. And the discussion that the Rebbeinu Shlom had with the Mashiach took place before the world was created. Again, because the Rebbeinu Shlom put into place all that was necessary. So he said to the Mashiach, who is going to accept the burden of the sufferings to atone for those averes? So the Mashiach said to the Rebbeinu Shlom, and the Yalkut calls the Mashiach, especially Mashiach Ephraim Tzidki. Ephraim is Ben Yosef. So this aspect is especially appropriate to the Mashiach Ben Yosef. So therefore, the Mashiach Ben Ephraim, was Mashiach Ben Yosef, basically, said that with the joy of my heart and with a tremendous simcha, rejoicing, I will gladly accept the sufferings of the Jewish nation so that they should make it through the exile, the golos. Because even the exile could not atone for all the chatoim of Jews. It needed also some great neshama, the suffering of some incredibly great neshama, and the pain that it would endure would enable Klai Yisrael to live. This is what the Rebbeinu Shlom wanted. Now, the reason why it needed a great neshama, because only in the great neshama can experience such suffering because of its greatness, that the amount of suffering will enable it to atone for Klai Yisrael. And if you ask, how can one suffer for another? If one did the sin, how can one suffer? Because the answer is that Kol Yisrael Arev Mzeh Lozeh. Somehow the corpus, the body of Israel, is interconnected. When one Jew suffers, it somehow actually has an atonement effect on another Jew also. Because somehow, spiritually, everybody's connected. So in a certain sense, when one Jew suffers, we all suffer. Okay? But in any case, suffering of one individual for another individual is a very profound Jewish concept. In any case, the Mashiach said that I will accept the suffering on one condition, he says to Rebbeinu Shlom, that every Jew who lives at the time I come will be saved. Every Jew who is not alive at the time, in other words, who's lived and died before he came, will also be saved. And every Jew who ever lived will also be saved. Now you can imagine the amount of kapara that the Mashiach is taking on. So the Rebbeinu Shlom says, are you sure this is what you want? The Mashiach says, yes. So it says in the Medrash that the Rebbeinu Shlom takes out an oil barzel, a yoke of iron. You ever see these huge oxen? Well, this yoke was solid steel or iron. You imagine the weight. And he comes at the Mashiach and he puts it over the neck of the Mashiach. Now the weight, which of course symbolizes the weight of the chatoim, that's how great the sins were so great that the koima, the posture of the Mashiach, was completely bent. And the weight was so incredibly difficult to bear that it says that the Mashiach himself started screaming and crying. And he screamed out and he says, look, I'm only a human being. How much can I bear? So the Rebbeinu Shlom says to him, isn't that what you agreed to do from the beginning of creation? So the Rebbeinu Shlom says, look, I myself will get off my throne when the time that the Churban Beis HaMikdash, I will, from the time the first temple was destroyed, the Beis HaMikdash, the Rebbeinu Shlom says to the Mashiach that I have not sat on my throne. I have also gone into exile. So the Mashiach said to Rebbeinu Shlom, okay, Dayoi, it's sufficient for the Eved, the servant, to be like his master. That if the master is somehow in suffering, Kaviyochol, whatever that means by the Rebbeinu Shlom, then the Mashiach, who is the Eved of the Rebbeinu Shlom, will also bear that. This is what the Medrash says. And interestingly enough, it says after that, and then you begin to realize why the Mashiach is so great in terms of his own schar. It says after that, in terms of understanding the reward of the Mashiach, that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, no less, the patriarchs, comes over to the Mashiach and says to him, you are greater than us. Because even though we were the founding, the fathers of Klal Yisrael, right, the others, we, however, did not suffer for the sins of Klal Yisrael. You, however, suffered for the sins of Klal Yisrael, therefore you enabled the rotzen of the Rabbeinu Shlom to be niskayim, because God wants Klal Yisrael to live and go into Olam Haba, and the Mashiach's sufferings have made that possible. So they told him that you are greater than us. And the Mashiach says, of course, that I only did what was the will of the Rabbeinu Shlom to give him that simcha. And then it goes on to say what the reward of the Mashiach is, that the Rabbeinu Shlom takes the Mashiach and dances with him alone, and he gives him a chelik which is not understandable, which is far greater than anybody's chelik. Well, you can imagine what the sufferings the Mashiach has gone through. Now, we begin to see that the concept of Mashiach is not only the individual who magala, the Orishan, who will reveal the unity of God throughout all creation as his method, and also as his task, but he's also what's called, in the terminology used by Kabbalah, Sovlei Chiloyim. He is one of those individuals who suffer the tremendous amount of sickness or disease or whatever you want to call it for Klal Yisrael, in order that Klal Yisrael should have a kapora. So the ones who suffer is the Trei Mashiachim, the Mashiach ben Yosef and the Mashiach ben David, and also Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu also suffers for Klal Yisrael, and that's why he was buried outside of Eretz Yisrael, because his suffering continues to this very day. Because the fact that his neshama, his guf, is not in Eretz Yisrael is tremendously soon for Moshe Rabbeinu, but that's all part of his bearing to atone for Klal Yisrael. So the greatest Sovlei Chiloyim, those people who bear the sufferings of Klal Yisrael to help Klal Yisrael through, is Moshe Utrei Mashiachim. That's a term which is very much used. Moshe Rabbeinu and the two Messiahs. Since Moshe Rabbeinu was the first Mashiach, those three always come as a group. And these are the greatest Sovlei Chiloyim. Now in every generation there are other Sovlei Chiloyim, great tzaddikim, people who by themselves do not deserve the amount of suffering they get, but they suffer for the sins not of themselves, but in order to alleviate the Yisun of Klal Yisrael. And I would imagine, just as a private idea, that since I had mentioned that Rav Shneur Kotler, Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, was Nifta, I knew him personally. He was a very choshev person, a very great onuf, and he was a tremendous bar midos and an emissar tzaddik. I would venture to say that even his last suffering also goes in the darga, the madrega of Sovlei Chiloyim, that somehow the last year, the sufferings that he's gone through, the last several months, seem to be far more than what he deserved. And I would venture to say that those Chiloyim sufferings is for a partial kapora of Klal Yisrael. And somehow he was zecha, he merited to be among the Sovlei Chiloyim. Because in order to become part of that madrega, you cannot be worthy of suffering because of your own sins. You must be clean from your own sins. Therefore, you can bear them for others. But if you yourself deserve sufferings because of your own chatoim, you don't become a Sovlei Chiloyim. That is a status which is reserved, obviously, only for those people who are tzaddikim gemurim in that sense. And therefore, they can bear the iniquity of Klal Yisrael. In any case, we see that through the Yalkut, that the Moshe Trei Mashiachim, especially the Mashiach ben Yosef, which seems to be even more so, because that Medrash talks about Mashiach Ephraim Tzidki, that one of the major personality traits is the idea of suffering that the Mashiach goes through. The idea of suffering for Klal Yisrael. And the idea that the Mashiach suffers, of course, it seems to be a fundamental idea. Now, unfortunately, Christianity, which I want to mention, understood the concept of a Messiah suffering. And now you begin to understand where it comes from. The concept of a Mashiach suffering is thousands of years old. It's one of the fundamental ideas of Yiddishkeit. And I show you the Medrash, that it goes on even by Sheshes Yimei Bereishis, even the beginning of creation, the Rebbe Shlom already designated the Mashiach that he would accept this role. And of course, they stole the idea, and they wanted to say, of course, that since he suffered, therefore this is the whole idea and so on, which is of course absurd. The question was asked that we see that Mashiach ben Yosef does not have to be from the Shevet Yosef. So the idea is that the Mashiach ben David is royalty. It's kingship. Kingship must be in terms of a lineage. Therefore the Mashiach ben David is truly from David HaMelech. Since kingship or royalty in that sense, he who is the executor of Klal Yisrael, he is the executive director in that sense, you know, he's the king, he of course follows in a direct line from David HaMelech. The Mashiach ben Yosef, however, is a king, but not in a king in the sense where he is actually a king over Klal Yisrael. His task is to bring the Gili Yehudai, the revelation of the unity or Chochmah to the Bria. In that sense, he has that mission, is to reveal incredible wisdom and to bring, well, which I'll go into the tasks of the of each Mashiach and so on, but basically, the Mashiach ben David is a king over Klal Yisrael, the physical Klal Yisrael, and the Mashiach ben Yosef, who is also anointed to redeem Israel, does not preside over them as a king. However, he's still a melech with the Mashiach ben David, since they both have the Yechidah, which is the crown. But it's a crown, it's two different missions. One to rule over Klal Yisrael, and the other to redeem Klal Yisrael. Take them out of the hands of the Goyim, and to restore them to the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a different kind of kingship. Therefore, he can be from any tribe. Like Moshe Rabbeinu, he was a Sherish of the Mashiach ben Yosef, and he really was. He was Shevet Levi. He was not Shevet Yehuda. However, Dovr HaMelech and all the kings of Klal Yisrael, including the Mashiach ben David, must come from Dovr HaMelech, since true royalty must be in a hereditary line. Therefore, he must be from the, of course, Shevet Yehuda. In any case, we see that one of the major characteristics of the Mashiach ben Yosef, especially, and that's what the Medrash talks about, is the concept of suffering. And I mentioned previously that it's something which Christianity has stolen from, obviously, what is real Hashkofer ideas. And of course, they've said that he has suffered, therefore he's the Mashiach, which of course is absurd, because everybody suffers, so does that mean everybody's Mashiach? The idea, of course, is that the Mashiach does suffer for Klal Yisrael, but suffering does not make him the Mashiach, obviously. If he's Mashiach, he suffers. But you could suffer for your own sins, and undoubtedly that's exactly what he was doing. He wasn't suffering for anybody outside of himself, and I doubt if his suffering has ended. But in any case, we do see the concept of Sivli Choloim that the Mashiach is included under. Now, it's very important to understand that who suffers? The Shirish of a Mashiach ben Yosef or Mashiach ben David is not the one that suffers. It's the Yechidah that suffers, the crown. The neshama that's called Yechida, that is the one that suffers, not the sheresh, okay? The root. That's why you find many, many gedolim who may have been a sheresh of Mashiach ben Yosef, who do not suffer in that sense. It is Yechida that suffers. Now, when we talk about suffering, what do we mean by suffering? How does the Mashiach suffer? And the answer is that he is given over to what's called klipos, or shells. In other words, he is what's called b'toch haklipos, in the shells, or he is given over to the forces of evil. The Yechidah is in the klipos, which means that it is subdued and dominated by the forces of evil, the sitra achra, yitzahara, machamavis, whatever you want to call them. As such, what's missing to him is a tremendous amount of awe. Miyut or, in other words, because he's surrounded by those forces, he does not experience the Ribbono Shel Olam. And his soul, his shirish, is so great that not experiencing the Ribbono Shel Olam is incredible yisurin, pain. In other words, he does not experience the Ribbono Shel Olam. His soul, the greater neshama you are, the more greater sensitive you are to the lack of the experience of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because that you're that close or that much nearer, and therefore if you deny him the awe, that tremendous contact with the Ribbono Shel Olam, then his suffering is far more than a lower kind of neshama that is not as close in terms of its source. So the suffering of the Mashiach is that since he's surrounded by the klipos or the sitra achra, forces of evil, he does not experience the Ribbono Shel Olam, And that to him is incredibly yisurin. That mute or, that diminishing of light, or that diminishing of experience of the Rabbeinu Shalom, is an incredible amount of suffering for the Mashiach. Now, there's also another very important idea, which I had mentioned previously. When it is always said that something is given over in the hands of the Sitra Achra, not only is it implied that whatever is given over suffers, obviously, because it cannot connect or experience the Rabbeinu Shalom, it also means that the Sitra Achra uses that for its own gains, right? That's what it means. That the Sitra Achra has it in its hand, and it's now going to use it, or him, or whatever, for its own gains. So therefore, since the Yechida is in the hands of the Sitra Achra, it means that the Yetzirah, or the Satan, is going to use the Yechida for its own purposes. And what is the purpose of the Yechida? Always to master the Yichud of the Rabbeinu Shalom, to hide from humanity the true revelation of the unity of the Rabbeinu Shalom. So therefore, the Sitra Achra, the Satan, uses people, usually Goyim, and evil people, even Jews who are very evil. He uses them and he gives them koyach, success, in their endeavors to hide the truth from the world. Now, interestingly enough, if we understand that, when the Rabbeinu Shalom says, well, the Yechida of the Mashiach, there were several specific times when it really went into the Klipas, even further. When the Bayis Rishon, when the destruction of the first temple occurred, the Yechida of the Mashiach, or the Yechida of Adam Rishon, whatever, went into the Klipas, which is the Yinsham of the Mashiach, much stronger, because again, that's what it means. The first temple is destroyed, which means that the Yechida goes even more, which means that if the first temple is destroyed, means the Satan has now power over Israel, that he can destroy their temple, which means, of course, that he has power over the Yechida. But wait a minute. We know that the Yechida is that instrument, or that Neshama, which can masig, or comprehend, the unity of God. Therefore, anybody who has that under his control can actually bring that understanding of unity to anybody he wants. Now, at the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon, what was, in terms of history, what was the major movement historically that was occurring by the Goyim, which we can see is the repercussion of the Yechida being even more in the Klipas? And the answer to that is, when did the Churban Bayis Rishon happen? Approximately 586 BCE, correct? Well, basically, two things happened. And again, both in the area of Chochmah, wisdom, because that's the specialty of the Yechida. The first thing is that was the beginnings of Greek philosophy. Socrates was around then, and that was really the beginning of Greek philosophy. And Greek philosophy or Greek thought really forms the foundation of Western civilization from the Greeks. And then the Romans borrowed on that. And that began at around the time of the Churban Bayis Rishon. So therefore, the Yechida in the Klipas means that the Satan uses the Yechida to promote thinking or intelligent thought, logical thought and so on, and he gives it to the Goyim that they should promote their own culture and of course go against the Jew, which is of course what they did. Hanukkah came about. He wanted to Hellenize the entire known world. Where's Hellenization stem from? It's the Chochmah of the Greeks, which started approximately at the time the first temple was destroyed. But what gave it the impetus Kabbalistically is that the Yechida went even more into the Klipas. And also, very strangely enough, even in, that's in the known world, but even in the Far East, in India and so on, in the Far East, what also began at that time was what's called Buddhism. Now, Buddhism was a very radical departure from Hinduism. Most of the world at that time was polytheistic, terribly polytheistic. I mean, they had local deities all over the place. What Buddhism came is he basically turned away from all that and he concentrated on the notion of self, to negate self. It was a much greater chokhmah that he presented. It was much truer. So that also is a historical repercussion of the Yechida being more in the Klipas. So it comes out that when Yechida goes in the Klipas, whoever has the Yechida, you can use it as an instrument for arriving at truth. But since the Satan has that, he gives the truth to the Goyim, and the Goyim, of course, take it and turn it against the Jew and say that they have the Chokmah. They use it, of course, to negate the existence of the Ribbono Shel Olam and to promote their own wisdom. So the first time that it really went into the Klipas was in the Churban Bayis Rishon, and the historical events that occur at that time, of course, is Buddhism in the Far East and the entire beginning of Western civilization, which is the beginning of Greek philosophy, Greek culture. The second time the Yechida really went into the Klipas was in the Churban Bayis Sheni, right? Well, again, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed again, right? So again, it was destroyed. But the fact that that was destroyed, what does that indicate? It indicates that the Satan had Klai Yisrael much greater. He had dominion over Klai Yisrael, or else he could never do what he did. Which means that the Yechida was even more in the Klipas. And what is the Yechida again? It's the instrument by which you arrive at truth, or the greater understanding of unity of God. So what happened around the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni? Of course, the rise of Christianity. Now, of course, most Rome religion, of course, mythology, was tremendous amount of polytheism. And Christianity, which is a belief in one God divided three ways, is far better than having 400 gods at your disposal. It was petty religions. So at the same time that the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed, we find the Goyim coming nearer to the truth, right? Which is Christianity, which is nearer to the truth than obviously Rome, Greek mythology. Again, you find an incredible duel, that the world's religions is now again coming closer to the truth. But of course, the Goyim say, we have the truth, and to persecute the Jews, that we are the chosen nation, and so on, and all their Na'ash Gaiden. But again, you see historically, that in the Churban Bayis Sheni, when Yechida goes more in the Klipas, the Yechida is used as the instrument for greater truth, and lo and behold, the Goyim have greater truth. That's Christianity, which is far greater in terms of its approach to truth than Greek mythology. Of course, it's an incredible distortion of the MS, but still, it's better than where they're coming from. But they got that because that is what the Kabbalistic event manifests itself in historical events in world history. That the Satan gives the Goyim greater powers to arrive at the truth, to be used against the Jew himself. And the third great historical event is until, even after the rise of Christianity, the Jews were in Golis, but they were in Eretz Yisrael and they were also in Bavel. At about 600 ACE is when they really started going into exile. That was the close of the Gemara, the Talmudic period, and then they really went into exile. What occurred in 600 ACE, which was when the Golis really started, Islam. Now, what happened before Islam is that most of the Arab nations were incredibly petty atheism. Every city had its local deity. All of a sudden, all Islam, which is Ishmael, is united under the banner of a one God, even though they said that Muhammad was the only one. Here again is the idea that the Goyim are reaching greater truths, that even the Arabs realize and believe in one God, even if they said that Muhammad was his only prophet. But even then, Goyim are realizing the truth, which is again the old story of the Klipa, of the Yechida going more into the Klipas, which means that the Satan uses it to give greater truth to the Goyim, and of course the Goyim who arrive at that greater truth now use it to wipe out the Jews themselves. So we see that one of the fundamental ideas in history is that Kabbalistic events, things which really happen on a spiritual plane, actually manifest themselves in world history very neatly, and that what determines these historical events, of course, is what the Jews do, because it's the Chatoim of Yidden that put the Yechid in the Klipas in the first place, which gave the power to the Goy altogether. This is what we understand, how the Yechid in the Klipas manifest itself, being used by the Satan to promote Goyim, to promote evil, and to be used against the Jew itself. And it's always the Yechid which is always the vehicle by reaching greater truth, because, again, Yechida is the Hasog of Yehudai. That's the instrument by which the Mashiach reveals the presence of the unity of God. So the Satan uses the same revelation of unity, and he gives the Goyim more truth, but they use it against the Yidden, which of course becomes a kapora for the Yidden themselves. this has been a demonstration of when the Yechidah goes into the Klippas, which is tremendous Yisurin, that it cannot experience the unity of God. So therefore the Sitra Achra, who has it in his hands, takes that unity of God and gives it to the Goyim. And they use that unity against Klal Yisrael itself. And history shapes itself up in that direction. So we begin to see some of the internal structure of history and how it actually coincides with cataclysmic Jewish history in terms of himself as a human being. Now, we've been going and trying to understand what the spiritual ideas of Mashiach, that basically we're talking about a Sherish of the Mashiach ben Yosef or a Sherish of the Mashiach ben David, that there exists in every generation two souls that can have the potential capacity of the Mashiach, if they get the Yechidah, and the Yechidah is Malko Mashiach, is the actual Mashiach itself, the Neshama of the Mashiach, and that Yechidah, I mentioned also, is in tremendous amount of suffering, and it's in what's called Klippas, or it's in the dominion of the Satan, and the Satan of course uses it to influence world history. So we see so far that the suffering of the Mashiach itself, as I showed you by the Medrash, actually expiates many of the chatoim, the sins of Klal Yisrael, and Israel is able to survive the golos or the exile as a result of the sufferings of the Mashiach. Now what I want to do is analyze the Mashiach himself in terms of as a human being. What happens then? Now, interestingly enough, when we look at Chazal, when we look at the Torah, we always find that somehow the Mashiach, the birth of the Mashiach, or as he passes from generation to generation in terms of his lineage, it always seems to go derech tuma, means by way of sins. It always seems to be sins connected with the birth of the lineage of the Mashiach himself, especially the Mashiach ben David and even the Mashiach ben Yosef. The first time we see that is by Loit. Loit had two daughters, and after the destruction of Sodom, they all thought the world was destroyed. So therefore they thought there was no other man alive, and they both decided to have relations with their own father. And one of them had a son, and she called him Moav, because Me'avi, from my father. And of course from Moav comes Rus. Rus was brought from Moav. So therefore, and Rus was of course the feminine chelik of the Mashiach, because from her comes Dovid HaMelech. So obviously she's contributing something to the Neshama and so on. So therefore the first, where we begin to see the idea of that the Mashiach's lineage always seems to be associated with chatoim, sins, is Loit, through Moav, who eventually, of course, gives birth to Rus. We again find the next occurrence is by Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda has a daughter-in-law, Tamar, and her husband, of course, died, was Yehuda's son, and he never, he was supposed to give her his youngest son, which he didn't. So therefore she contrived an entire knunya, entire scheme, whereby through her her wiles, and Chazal say of course that she was right, she got Yehuda, that Yehuda had relations with her, and from her came a child. And that child of course gave birth eventually, from Yehuda of course gives birth to Dovid HaMelech, which is the whole lineage of Mashiach ben David. Now, Chazal say that the Bechira of Yehuda was taken away. It was not a chet. Bechira means his free will was taken away. And therefore, it wasn't a chet. But again, it looks like there was a chet. Again, there's always an association of doing something against what the Rebbeinu Shalom wants in terms of, you know, it looks like a chet. The Mashiach, again, seems to be coming through the appearances of chet, even if the thing itself is not an actual chet in itself. Now, the next time we find is by Boaz and Rus, where Rus decided to go to Boaz, and she stayed at his foot the entire night, and he wasn't married to her. And again, people were choshed, who knows what went on. So again, and even though later on he married her, but still, this individual who was born, you know, when did it happen really? Again, the appearances of something which is not completely alright. Then you find by Dovid HaMelech. Most people don't know this about Dovid HaMelech, but when Shmuel HaNavi came to anoint, the Rebbeinu Shem said, go to the house of Yishai, and there you will find the king of Israel. So he comes to the house of Yishai, and he looks at the firstborn, and he looks at him, this must be, because he looked beautiful. So Rebbeinu Shem says, the way I look at people and the way you look at people, of course, is not the same, so he was out. The second son, third son, finally, none of the sons were appropriate. Finally, Shmuel Hanavi says to Yishai, do you have somebody else? So he says, yeah, I've got a son who's tending sheep. The question is, why wasn't he brought at that time for Shmuel to look him over? And the answer to that is that the Medrash says that at the time, that Yishai, who was one of the four people who never sinned, okay, decided to have relations with his maidservant, and his wife found out about that, so she disguised herself. Instead of a maidservant, she was there. So he wound up having relations with his own wife, not with his maidservants. But she never told him, and she became pregnant. And the one she gave birth to was David. And he knew that he had no relations with her for many years. So he thought that she had relations with another individual. So in other words, it comes out that for all the years, people thought that David HaMelech was a mamzer. And David HaMelech also thought that. Even though Yishai decided not to divorce her, because he figured he just won't have relations with her anymore, whatever. So it comes out that all of a sudden, so of course David HaMelech was never informed about Shmuel HaNavi. How in the world could a mamzer be the king of Israel? So then finally, Shmuel HaNavi says to Yishai, do you have anybody else? He says, yes, but he can't be that person. So he calls him in, and that's exactly who it was. That person who everybody thought was a mamzer. So what happened was that the Medrash says that then David HaMelech opened his mouth and he said what's in the end of Hallel. He said that Evan Masu HaBoinim Oyesel Rosh Pina, that the stone, the cornerstone that was despised by the builders, has become the foundation of that very structure. Meis Hashem Hoizois Hiliflos Beinenu, and so on. He's referring to himself. That's when he said that. That all these years he thought that he was a mamzer or whatever, again derech tuma, and all of a sudden he comes out being the king of Israel, from the lowest to the greatest of all. And of course again we see, again the idea of the lineage of the Mashiach coming through derech tuma, the appearances of tuma. This is not what one would expect of the Mashiach, or certainly David HaMelech, who of course is the forerunner of the Mashiach. We find the same thing by the Mashiach ben Yosef in terms of Yosef. Yosef was in Mitzrayim. And what was the great Nisayon of Yosef? For Tifa's wife. Again, of course, he partially fell. He was not completely, didn't completely withstand that Nisayon. He partially fell. In any case, from that comes out the entire idea of why the Mashiach ben Yosef had to die. But in any case, without going into that, again, what he was involved was also that kind of derech tuma, of being associated always with what's called zimor, or some kind of incestuous undercurrents. So we see again that this kind of style of the Mashiach seems to be prevalent. And one of the reasons for that is that the birth of the Mashiach or his lineage has to be bederech hester, tremendously concealed, because there would be a lot of forces that try to prevent the Mashiach from being born. And somehow, if a sin is going to be committed, then the Satan says, I don't mind, let it go right through. Somehow he's not aware of the significance of what happened, because a chet is happening, and that's really all he wants, is chatayim. So in order to increase the hester of the birth of the Mashiach, the Rebbe Yisrael is master that by giving it the guises of chatayim. In any case, so this is one of the seemingly significant themes of the Mashiach's lineage. Now, I mentioned before that the suffering of the Mashiach basically is that there's what's called miyut or, a diminishing of Torah, a diminishing of the hasog of the Rebbeinu Shlom. Now, the Mashiach as a real person would experience his yechida in the klipas in what way? Remember, I said the yechida is in the klipas, in the hands of the Satan, so forgetting what the Satan does with it, but how does the Mashiach himself feel spiritually, is that he is not in contact with the Rebbeinu Shlom, and the fact that he has such a great soul gives him far greater suffering than others, since he is so close to the Rebbeinu Shlom. So that miyut or, because he's surrounded by the force of evil, is one of the tremendous ways he suffers. Now, when he is born and his yechidah is in the klipas, how does it manifest itself in reality? It manifests itself in reality in the fact that this is an individual who cannot learn Torah. That's what it manifests itself. There's a very famous, a great Hasidish Rebbe called the Yehudi HaKadosh, the Holy Jew, the Yid HaKadosh, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Mipishischa, very famous Hasidish Rebbe. He started the whole Polish Hasidus. And he said, what's brought down in one of his writings is he described the sufferings of the Mashiach. And it's very interesting because I've never really seen it anywhere else. He says, what's the difference between the suffering of a Mashiach and the suffering, or rather, what's the difference between the Mashiach and other tzaddikim? And what he says is rather remarkable. And of course, it makes sense when we understand the theory of what has to happen. He says that the Mashiach, all tzaddikim have the task is to learn Torah, right? And the next day they review what they learned and they go further. And the next day they review what they learned and they go further. In other words, tzaddikim are always growing spiritually. They are always growing in Torah. The Mashiach is not like that. The Mashiach learns Torah the first day. At night, the Ribbono Shel'olam forces him to forget it. So the next day, it comes that he's got to start from scratch. So he's got to not only recall what he learned the previous day, if he can at all, but he's got to grow on that. And the next night, the Ribbono Shel'olam makes him forget it again. This goes on, obviously, for the whole time that he is suffering. So it comes out that his yechida, which is in the klipas, means that he cannot be masik the Ribbono Shel'olam, which means that as a real human being, he cannot learn Torah, because Torah is what gives him the chokhmah. So here's an individual who cannot learn, for whatever reasons, whatever tevadigger reasons, and the Yid HaKadosh is referring to a living person. He's not referring to the sufferings of the yechida. He's talking about a living person as he is on earth. And he's saying that the Mashiach never learns. He's always at the beginning stages. He's always a master. He's always a beginner. Why? Because he's always forgetting what he learned. So in some way, the Ribbono Shel Olam subjects him to some tevadigger force, whatever it be, either physical reasons or psychological reasons or whatever tevadigger reasons he can stop this individual from learning. But the fact is that this person is always at the beginning, that he can never really accomplish what he can do. He's always a beginner. In other words, his yechida, being in the klipas, means that he cannot learn. That is the physical manifestation of what it means that the yechida is in the klipas. So the Sitra Achra uses that to give the chokhmah that the yechida would get to the goyim. But the Mashiach who has that yechida cannot learn. He doesn't have access to that chokhmah. Therefore, he can never learn. It's an exact correspondence. Therefore, his yechida in the klipas means that he himself is always a beginner in learning. So rather than thinking that the Mashiach is a tremendous Talmud Chacham, it seems much more likely that the Mashiach seems to be not a great Am Haaretz in that way, but a person who is really not that great in Chochmah. And the Yesurin comes from, how does the Yesurin, is that since his Neshama is so awesome, he realizes what Torah is and he can't learn. Could you imagine the tremendous frustration and suffering that this individual, as a real person, goes through? Because his neshama is so great that he's masig what it means to understand Torah, what it means to understand about the Ribbono Shel'olam. Yet, since his yechid is in the klipas, he can't learn in whatever form the Ribbono Shel'olam gives it to him. That is the sufferings of the Mashiach, mitzad what's called mit or, diminishing of light, diminishing of Torah. That is one of the Yisurin of the Mashiach. Now we're personalizing it in terms of what the Yisurin looks like. And also, how does it fit in terms of what we understand about the Yechida that is in the Klipas, and not the Shirish. But it comes out that the individual who is the Mashiach, especially the Mashiach Ben Yosef, is an individual that is incredibly frustrated because he really cannot be successful in any real measure in Torah. In other words, we see from the Yid HaKadosh's words what the Yisurin of the Mashiach is in a physical sense. and how it exactly makes sense in terms of our understanding of the Mashiach's Yisurin from the spiritual framework. Now, where do we see also this idea? And I had mentioned it previously, but now we can begin to delve into it. It says in Yeshaya Nun Beis at the end, Perek Nun Beis, Hine Yaskil Avdi, behold, my servant will become wise. And I had mentioned that Avdi, although other Rishonim say it means Klai Yisrael, but the Targum and also according to Api Kabbalah, according to Zohar and so on, it means Avdi Mishicho, the Mashiach himself. It says, Hine Yaskil Avdi, behold, my servant will grow wise. Yoram, V'nisu V'gova Mi'oid. He will grow more and more wise. Those are three Hebraic, three Lashonis expressions which indicate that he will grow more and more, and I indicated how much. He will grow to be greater than Avraham Avinu in wisdom. Then the second expression is greater than Moshe Rabbeinu in wisdom. And the third expression, V'gova Mi'oid, means he will be, his knowledge will be greater than the Malachim, Malchi Asheris. Imagine how he will go. But the fact that he says, it says, Hine Yaskil Avdi, he will grow wise, means that there's an idea of growth to this individual. That he starts off as an individual who knows very little. And the Rabbeinu Shlom somehow gives him the Chochmah when the time comes. And we now understand what it means. We can divide the times of Mashiach into several eras. The first tikufa is what's called the ikvus of the Mashiach, or the signs before the time before the Mashiach is born, because at that time the signs of his coming is apparent. And I had mentioned kulum chayom, when tigbeis ra, when evil proliferates to such an extent, that is the big signs that of the imminence of his coming. The second time is called the beginning or the aschalta de geula, when he is actually born. But he is born in the klipas, right? His yechid is in the klipas when he's born. So he's got to go through a lot of suffering. But this is the aschalta de geula in the sense that he has been born. And perhaps you could even look at it as still the ikvus de Mashiach. It's sort of like that middle period of ikvus de Mashiach, the imminent coming of the Mashiach, even though he's here. But it's also the aschalta de geula. The real aschalta de geula takes place when the Rabbeinu Shlom goes over to the Mashiach ben Yosef, and he is the first Mashiach, and that's why it happens with him, and he frees the Yechidah from the Klipas. That happens keheref ayin, instantly. All of a sudden, that individual who is the Mashiach ben Yosef immediately finds that he now can learn Torah on an incredible degree, because his Yechidah, which is the Yechidah of the Mashiach, has been freed. And before the Sitra Achron knows what hit him, all of a sudden, the Yechidah is outside his domain. Once the Yechidah is outside his domain, it descends to the earth, which means that it crowns this individual, and this individual now becomes the Mashiach in the beginning of his growth. Yaskil Avdi, and he begins doing things which people begin looking at him with a strange eye, because the individual, of course, is unique. He has talents which are very different. And slowly, as time goes on, people begin suspecting that there's something funny. There's something unique about this individual. And this individual, of course, is growing, because his Yechidah is outside the Klipas, and he has now been freed. He is no more a prisoner like he was, and he is now growing. So from Hine Yaskel Avdi, we see that the Mashiach's Chochmah, his ability to give wisdom, which is the method of the Mashiach, itself begins to grow. It takes on a growth pattern. That is only when the Yechidah is outside the Klipas, which means that whatever physical method the Rabbeinu Shlom stopped him from learning is now removed. Therefore, his suffering is over in that sense. So we now understand what the Yisurin of the Mashiach is, the inability to really learn Torah in the way he can, the tremendous hasoga that he has about Torah, and that is his Yisurin, the fact that the Rabbeinu Shlom takes him out, or takes the Yechidah out of the Klipas at an instant in time, and we then begin to see the growth of the Mashiach himself, which is really the beginning of Aschalta de Geula. Now, besides that form of suffering, there's another form of suffering that the Mashiach has. And that is in Yeshaya Nun Gimel. and also in Nun Beis. After it says, Hine Yaskel Avdi, Yoram V'nisiv Govami Oid, that he will grow mighty in wisdom, it says a very bizarre kind of statement after. It says, V'chein Mishchas Me'ishmar Eho, the appearance of the Mashiach looks corrupt. Hashchosa, corruption, distortion. V'soyam Ibnei Odom. It says there that the image, the visage of the Mashiach, his form, meaning that the person himself looks corrupted. And it says that the Amim, the peoples, the nations, they look at the person who is Mashiach and say, we don't believe this. They are astonished that this person is the Mashiach. So we see that the Mashiach also has hashchosa, tremendous corruption, in some aspect, not only in the mi'at or the fact that he cannot learn, but there's a tremendous hashchosa or corruption of his own midas or in whatever way it takes place. And that it's so corrupt that it's almost like a disfigurement of a person. That's how corrupt he is. That's the hashchosa. And of course this hashchosa exists against the incredible yearning of the Mashiach to be with the Rebbeinu Shlom because of the height of his neshama. So that's yisurin on a second level. Not only can he not learn, but he also cannot be the tzaddik that he wants to be. Instead he winds up being a mushchos, somehow a disfigurement or a corruption in some way. And the question is, why is he also have hashchos? And the answer, because Klai Yisrael is at fault. The Mashiach, when he suffers for Klai Yisrael, he suffers in the exact chatoim of Klai Yisrael. He is the mirror image of Klai Yisrael. In Yeshaya Nun Gimel it says, V'hu mechulol mipsho'enu, he is the reverse, or he is that which is the cholo, means you transfer. He is that individual who receives the chatoim of Klai Yisrael. It's like a mirror. If Klai Yisrael looked in the mirror, if the chatoim of Klai Yisrael was personified in a human being, it would look like the Mashiach. It would look like the Mishchas Me'ishmar Eho. So therefore, his suffering is the chatoim of Klai Yisrael. And whatever Klai Yisrael is into, he is into also. Except he has no bechira. And the suffering of the Mashiach is that his neshama is so great that he doesn't want to be into those kind of chatoim or whatever. He would, of course, he wants to be what his neshama dictates him to be. So therefore, it's the v'hu mechul mipsheinu. He is the reverse, or he is the substitute figure for Klai Yisrael, bearing the iniquities or the chatoim of Klai Yisrael, which means that he bears the chatoim itself of Klai Yisrael, that he actually possesses those chatoim without bechira that Klai Yisrael has. So when Klai Yisrael will look at him and say, we never expected you to be the Mashiach, how in the world could you be? The Mashiach is going to turn around to them and say, I look like this because that's what you look like on a spiritual plane. That's what you look like in terms of chatoim. That's what Klai Yisrael is. So the Yisur of the Mashiach is the Hashchosa, which is a mirror of is the personification of the chatoim of Klai Yisrael, but he suffers that way because he doesn't want to be that way. And the second Yisur is mi'at or, that he can't learn. Because Klai Yisrael is abandoning Torah, right? The chet of bitul Torah, therefore forces him that he cannot learn Torah. Again, even that is a mirror image of Klai Yisrael's chatoim. Therefore we understand that the chet of the Mashiach, or rather the Yisur of the Mashiach, comes out to be exactly what the chatoim of Klai Yisrael is. Because that's what he bears. And that's the midah keneged midah. He is mechapa, he atones for Klai Yisrael by personifying their sins and going through a tremendous amount of suffering that he cannot do what Klai Yisrael is supposed to do. To be that tzaddik, to be that goyin in Torah. So he cannot do that. And this yisurin of this kind, of course, is a reflection of the yechidah and the klipas. And it is especially true of the Mashiach ben Yosef. And we see it actually in Yosef HaTzadik in Mitzrayim. Yosef was 13 years he was in Mitzrayim. What was he? He was a prisoner. What does that mean? Here is a man who's Yosef, who can save Egypt, and he did. Could you imagine that Egypt is keeping a man of that talents in prison? He's the man who saved Egypt in terms of his advice about the famine. And what is Egypt? Where's the recognition of the ability of a person that can save a whole nation as great as Egypt? Of course he's in prison. Therefore Yosef, the great talents of Yosef, where is it? It's in prison. That's where the Mashiach ben Yosef is also. He's in prison. And who is he in prison at the hands of? Yosef was in the hands of Mitzrayim, and the Mashiach ben Yosef, he's in the hands, of course, of the Sitra Achra, of the Sotan. And the reason why he's in prison, the reason why he cannot exercise those talents, and the reason why he's in all these suffering, is because of the Chatoim of Klal Yisrael that have given the power to the Sitra Achra to imprison the Mashiach ben Yosef. So we see that Yosef HaTzadik is the forerunner of what the Mashiach ben Yosef looks like. And just like Yosef HaTzadik, when he was taken out of prison, do you know that there's only two psukim or one pasuk that talks about his being taken out? In one pasuk he's in prison, in Miketz. And in the next pasuk he's out of prison, standing in front of Paray. It's incredible. That's the Herif Ayin, that's the blink of an eye, that the Rebbeinu Shalom takes the Mashiach ben Yosef out of the klipas, and in the next instant, Mitzrayim lays at his feet. Exactly. That is why Yosef HaTzadik in Mitzrayim is the forerunner for the personality of the Mashiach himself. That's how we see it. That Mashiach ben Yosef, he is in prison because of the Chatoim or whatever he has to Masakin. All his talents are naught. Could you imagine a man of Yosef HaTzadik's talents sitting and languishing in prison for 13 years? Forget about the fact that, imagine what it meant to him that his life is going by and he can't do anything about it really, that he's got to sit in prison. What kind of yisurin must he have suffered that he knew who he was and there's nothing he could do about it? He's on the lowest social level of Egypt in their prisons. So therefore, we begin to see some of the personality of the Mashiach ben Yosef, especially as reflected in Yosef HaTzadik. And that is that first, that he suffers, and that is Yisurin is Miut Or, Torah, and also the idea of Hashchosa as a reflection of the Chatoim of Klal Yisrael, and Le'osid Lovoy, when the Rebbeinu Shalom will take him out of the Klipas Sitra Achra, he will instantly be turned into, of course, the Mashiach ben Yosef. And like the Ramchal, Moshe Chaim Lutzate says, when he's out of the Klipas, what does the Mashiach look like? So he uses the expression Diyuknei Nirimi Oid, that the expression of his face when he's out of the klipas is awesome to behold. The spirituality that lies in that person when he's out of the klipas in that split second reversal is awesome. So obviously that was always the pnimius, and it was because Klal Yisrael could not see the Mashiach ben Yosef because he was suffering for Klal Yisrael and undoing their very chatoim in order to atone for Klal Yisrael himself. Now, let me also mention that we can also see something of the Mashiach ben Yosef by looking at Moshe Rabbeinu. It says in Kedusha by Musaf, Hinei go'alti eschem achis kreishes, behold, I will redeem you the second time like I redeemed you the first. In there is a murdik soid, or secret, that the Geula Achroina, it looks, resembles in a tremendous extent the Gula Rishona, the first redemption. Now take a look at the first Mashiach ben Yosef, Moshe Rabbeinu. What kind of person was he? Moshe Rabbeinu did not know he was Mashiach until he was 80 years old. The same thing with the Mashiach. I'm not saying he won't know until he's 80, but he also will not know. He will suffer and he won't know. Moshe Rabbeinu was in Golus. When he ran away from Egypt, he was in exile. He was in prison. There was nothing he could do for Klal Yisrael. All his talents can only be used for Goyim because he was the king of Ethiopia. He was a man who was in prison, who can only use his talents to better Goyim's life because he was away from Klal Yisrael, and the only Jewish settlement at those times was what? Was Egypt. So here's a man who was as great as Moshe Rabbeinu in terms of talents, in exile for all those years. Finally, he's informed he's a Mashiach and he comes back to Klal Yisrael. The same idea with the Mashiach ben Yosef, who was in prison for all those years, can't do anything for Klal Yisrael. He's later informed of who he is, and then of course he goes back, of course, to redeem Klal Yisrael. It doesn't mean he's outside, but even within Klal Yisrael, they don't know who he is. Also, very interestingly enough, which most people don't take into recognition in terms of significance, Moshe Rabbeinu was an Egyptian. He was a Jewish, but from birth he grew up in the very nation he had to dominate and eventually, of course, take the Jews out of. He looked, spoke, acted like an Egyptian. He had to, or else they would have killed him. He grew up in Paro's house. On the contrary, they thought he was one of their own. Had they thought that he would be the girl, that he is really Jewish, obviously they would have killed him. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu looked like a secularized Egyptian. Was because for some reason, the greatest hester is that the person who will one day subdue and dominate the nation that he has to take over actually is part of them in that sense. He is a secularized individual. Although in Pnimius, Moshe Rabbeinu knew who he was, but he couldn't say it out. So it's probable that the Mashiach ben Yosef is also secularized in that sense. In the sense that somehow he has a great shaychus with the Goyishe Welt, especially with the world of Esav, which is Christianity, which is represented, of course, by American civilization, Western culture, that he looks like a Western or Americanized individual, but that, of course, is a tremendous hester. And that nation, which is Western civilization, which is Esav, is the whole task of the Mashiach ben Yosef to subdue. Therefore, again, we can see part of the personality of the Mashiach. Hopefully I've given you some picture of the Mashiach in terms of himself as a real person, that is an individual who suffers for Klal Yisrael, who reflects the sins of Klal Yisrael, both in the inability to really learn Torah, also in the idea of his difficulty in maintaining his tzitzis, also in the idea that by looking at Yosef Mitzrayim and also Moshe Rabbeinu Mitzrayim, we can also see some of the ideas of who the Mashiach ben Yosef can be. Now I want to conclude with a certain idea and see how that's illustrated in the Chumash. We learn in the Akedah, we all know what the Akedah is, that Avraham Avinu, he offered his son up, Yitzchak, right? And of course he withstood the test, he offered him up, and the Rebbe Hashem says, now I see that you really love me. And of course, because of the schar of the Akedah, we are still benefiting from the reward. Now, the Akedah, I want to indicate to you what the Akedah means up your remes. What is the Akedah really all about? The internal structure of the Akedah in terms of it being a remes, an illusion to something different. And I will do that by asking you several questions. The first question is, why is it that the Nisoyan, the test of Abraham, and this was his last test, why did it take the form that he's got to sacrifice his son? What kind of form is that? What kind of test? Why is the Rebbe Hashem gave the last test of Avram and he says, sacrifice your son? Why did the test take that form? Because every form that a test takes also alludes to what is really going on. That's the first question I ask. The second question I ask is that Avram Avinu, all of a sudden the Malach says, don't sacrifice your son, and then it says in Chumash, Vine Ayel, Acha. And there's a ram sitting there, Nechaz Basfach, it was caught in a thicket, right? Bekanov, with its horns. There's a ram sitting there, caught in the thicket with its horns, and Avram goes over to that ram, and he offers it, Tachas Benoi, instead of his son, he offers it for a burnt offering. So my question is, why an isle? Why a ram? What's the difference really what was there? Third question is, really, who cares how it was caught, by its horns or by its legs? The Chumash says is that it was caught by its horns. What do I really care if it was caught by its horns or if it was caught by its legs? What's the difference? The fourth question that I'll ask is that it should have said, and he offered it as a burnt offering, as an oila. What do you mean by tachas benoi, instead of his son? What is the Chumash really trying to tell us? By Tachas Benoi, instead of its son. The fifth question I'll ask is that Rashi says that this isle, this ram, is not a plain ram. This ram has been waiting there for 2,000 years, So my question is, what does that mean?
What do you mean?
A ram's got to sit there, wait 2,000 years in order for Avram to use it? The Roshim couldn't make a local ram come and be used? What does that mean? It's been waiting there for 2,000 years. The sixth question I'll ask is that Rashi says that when the ram saw that Avram Avinu was going to sacrifice his son, it started running to offer itself instead of his son. So the Satan saw it running and it bounded up with its horns in the bush. That's how it got bound up, by the way. The Satan is what bound it up. So the question is, what do you mean the ram saw it and it started running to Avram? And why did the Satan bind it up? I mean, like, what is really going on? And the last question I'll ask is that the Rebbeinu Shlom in the beginning, when he commands Avram, he says to Avram, Kach es bincha, take your son, es yechidcha, your only one, asher ahavta, that you love. Why these different lashonos? Let's try to understand the Akedo, Api Remez. And the truth is that after we understand the entire inyan of the Mashiach, that is all what's revealed in the entire inyan of the Akedo. And let's see how it's revealed. The Rabbeinu Shlom says the first question is, why is this last Nisoyin of Avram? Why is it this form? Because the Rabbeinu Shlom is telling Avram that in the end of days, your son, Klai Yisrael, will be Chayiv Misa. They will have to be offered up on the altar. Because their Chatoim will be so great that they will have to be offered up on the altar. So therefore, the Nisoyin takes its form that Klai Yisrael, like Yitzchak, must be offered up on the altar. It's Chayiv Misa in that sense. That's why it took that form. So Avram brings his son, right? And he brings it, and all of a sudden he sees an aisle. The Malach says, do not sacrifice your son. And Avram Avinu sees an aisle. Who is that aisle? You remember I said that where is the remez for the Mashiach ben Yosef? In the Kanei Re'en, the horns of a ram. That aisle is the symbol of the Mashiach, the ram, the Kanei Re'em, the horns of the ram. That ram that Avram is going to take, instead of his son, he's going to take the Yisurin of the Mashiach, and he's going to offer that instead. That's why it says, Tachas Benoi, instead of his son being offered, because somebody must atone for those sins, so instead of a son, he's going to take the ram, which is the Mashiach. And now we understand why Rashi says it's been waiting there 2,000 years. Because when the Rebbeinu Shlom made the agreement with the Mashiach, in the beginning of creation, that's right, the Mashiach is waiting for the Mashiach is waiting 2,000 years until this occurrence, because that's when the bargain was struck up with the Mashiach. Therefore, he's of course waiting 2,000 years. So therefore, that is why that particular Rav has been waiting for 2,000 years. Why does the Rebbeinu Shlom says, Kach noz binchos yechidcho? Because the Rebbeinu Shlom said to Avram outright, either take your son or take your yechidcho, your yechida. It's either your son that gets offered or it's yechida, the one of the neshama that gets offered. The Rebbeinu Shlom said in the beginning to Avram, that it's got to be one or the other, your ben or the yechid of the Mashiach, which of course is the aisle, that is the neshama of the Mashiach. So that's what the Rebbeinu Shlom means by it's bincho, it's yechidcho. Either your son or the yechid, which is the neshama of the Mashiach, has to be offered. So Avram, of course, he's taking his son, and the alternate, of course, is the yechid, which is the aisle, which has been waiting 2,000 years. The question, of course, in terms of the aisle started running, of course the aisle started running because it, as the Mashiach, wants to replace itself for Klai Yisrael. So what does the Satan do? The Satan doesn't want it to give itself up for Klai Yisrael, so he ties it up by its horns. What are the horns of the Mashiach? The weapons of the Mashiach. The horns are symbolic of the weapons of the Mashiach. That's how he does his job. What are the weapons of the Mashiach? To Megal Yehud, remember the horns? Is a product of the mind, and it's the Chochmah. So the weapon of the Mashiach is his Chochmah, and that are his horns. So the Sitra Achra thinks that the Mashiach is going to try to be Chuzah, Klai Yisrael to Tshuva, by being Megal the Yichr of the Rebbeinu Shalom, its horns. So he takes those horns and he ties them up. He makes the Mashiach impotent. Mashiach cannot learn. But he doesn't. So what he figures is that the Mashiach now cannot be Megala the Yichud of the Rebbe Shalom, because its horns are tied up in this bush. But the Sitra Acha does not realize that the Yisun that the Mashiach has, that it cannot learn in Megala Yichudoi, is the very Yisun that is Tachas Benoi. Which shows how the Sitra Achra himself brought the Geula. Because he tied up the Mashiach's horns, which is the weapon of the Mashiach, in order for the Mashiach not to redeem Klal Yisrael through tshuva. But it comes out that the Yisurin that the Mashiach has, having its horns tied up, which is its ability to redeem Klal Yisrael, which is Chochmah, wisdom, is the very way that the Mashiach redeems Klal Yisrael. So the Sitra Achra himself is the individual that redeems Israel, unknowingly. That's the way Rebbeinu Shlom works. That the Hester, the concealment of the entire world history, is so great that the Satan himself is the one who redeems Klal Yisrael. Because he's the one that has the Yechida in his grasp, right? And therefore he figures that's the way he will destroy Klal Yisrael. But the suffering of the Mashiach in the Klipas, which is represented by the Mashiach not being able to learn, which is represented by the Keren, the horns of the isle, being Nizbach, totally wrapped up in that bush, is the very Yisurin that the Mashiach is Mechapa Klal Yisrael. So we see that the whole Akedah, the binding of Yitzchak, is nothing more than the remez for how the Klal Yisrael will be Nigal. So again, the Nesoyim took that form because that is what L'Osid Lovay will be, that clients will be Mechuyib Misa, Ibud, right? And the only ones who could redeem either Bincho, Klai Yisrael, or Yechidcho, or the Yechidah, and the Rebbeinu Shel Mamash tells him that the isle sitting here is the Mashiach, because the Kani Re'im, the ram, is the symbol of the Mashiach, like we find by Yosef, Vezois HaBrochon, Parshas Vezois HaBrochon. Then we see the idea that who cares if it's caught by its horns? Name that it's caught by its horns, because the Satan wants to make sure that it doesn't redeem Klal Yisrael, and that is exactly how it does redeem Klal Yisrael, by tying up its weapons. In other words, the horns are the weapons of the Mashiach. That's why he didn't tie up the feet; he tied up the Mashiach's horns, because that's how you make him impotent. That's how you stop the Mashiach. Yechid in the Klipas. The wisdom, the chokhmah of the Mashiach ben Yosef, that's how you make sure he doesn't do his job. And of course it's tachas benoi, because instead of Klal Yisrael, it's the Mashiach that comes, offers himself, because somebody has to atone for the chatoim of Klal Yisrael. And that's why he's muchen from 6th year, of course 2,000 years, because he is the Mashiach that's been waiting for thousands of years, of course, to suffer, or to be suivu choloim of Klal Yisrael. And that's why the aisle started running, because of course that's exactly what the Mashiach wanted to do. And the phenomenal idea is that the Satan, as I mentioned, instead of making sure that Klal Yisrael is never Chas V'Shalom, actually is the instrument for the goal of Klal Yisrael. Because the Yisurin that the Mashiach suffers, because he cannot do what he can do, his Chochmah, which is of course a symbolic of the Yechidah and the Klipas, is the very way the Satan is the very way Klal Yisrael is Nigal. And that's the way the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, as I mentioned, is always good Israel. That not only will he redeem Israel, but he will make the arch enemy of Israel, the Satan, be the Shliach. That's why the Rebbeinu Shel Olam allows the Satan to exist, even though the Satan is doing it for his own ends, which is another topic I haven't gone into. Because the Rebbeinu Shel Olam will show that the Satan himself, who is the last one in the world who wants to redeem Klal Yisrael, so he can continue living, winds up in the end to be the very instrument of the Geul of Klal Yisrael. And that is the greatest expression of the absolute supremacy and power of the Rebbeinu Shalom. That the Chochmah of the Rebbeinu Shalom is so omuk, so great, that the greatest enemy of Klal Yisrael is used by the Rebbeinu Shalom to bring the Geul or the redemption of Klal Yisrael. So the one who is most surprised, of course, is the Satan. Because not only does he find Klal Yisrael redeemed, but he is the one who did it by his very actions. This is what's merumas, this is what's indicated, this is what's indicated in the idea of the Akedah as the remez for the entire idea of the Mashiach suffering for Klal Yisrael and waiting, of course, and bringing about the redemption of Klal Yisrael. This is basically, the discussion, I just wanted to show you how Chazal or Chumash, Torah, can be learnt api remez, and how incredibly you can learn Torah on one plane, and on a plane lower than that, it's a completely different story with the same words as the first plane, as Pshat. And also, to give everybody some glimpse of the personality of the Mashiach, the Yisun of the Mashiach, the idea of the Yechidah, and the idea of what the Mashiach goes through in terms of redeeming Klal Yisrael.